Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome everybody to another edition of CMC Radio. I'm your host, Rob May. I hope everyone's having a good Thursday so far. It is 4 p.m. here on the East Coast and unseasonably warm, obviously. Yeah, it's the first week of November and we're hitting 70. A little gloomy out with the rain coming and going, but you can't complain. Not if you are used to the Northeast winters we've had. Moving right along, we have joining us again for today is Samantha Anesta of BeASisterToASister.org. Samantha, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you, Rob?
I'm doing very well, and I'm glad to have you back. I know that we had a little bit of an absence for the last couple of weeks as you were away on a little bit of a trip, which is always fascinating to hear about when you come back. But before we get to all of that, why don't you just, tell us a little bit about the organization Be A Sister to A Sister, the many fascinating things that you guys are trying to do, and all the ways that you kind of help out.
Sure. So Be A Sister to A Sister is actually an aftercare program. What we do is we create survivor-led support groups, and we also give survivors continuations of services that may have maxed out from the original programs that they were put through. So we help provide them with extra counseling, extra medical care, legal assistance, food programs, housing, and even access to education if they so desire.
Very cool. And now, how are you able to do such things? I mean, you obviously have to work with other groups to make this happen, right?
Yes, I do work with other groups to make this happen, and I've been very fortunate because I've had some people that have actually opened up their services to me and to us, to our girls, which has been very helpful. But, of course, as with like a lot of nonprofit organizations, one of the biggest challenges is the funding needed to provide a lot of other extra badly needed things for the girls, things like in New York City, Metro cards are very popular here. So Metro cards are needed very badly for a lot of the girls to travel, especially if they do have jobs, to get to work on time, to get to school and things of that nature. And also to just to have extra money to be able to give them access to better nutrition as well. That's always a big factor in their lives.
Sure. So how does it work now? If somebody is there, you know, they're out in the streets or they're just realizing that they're involved in something terrible and they finally want to get out.
Right.
How does it work? What's the steps that they should take to contact you guys or to get out of a bad situation like that?
Right. Well, to contact us, I mean, if they have access to the internet or if they have access to email, they can always contact us at info@beasistertoasister.org, or we do have an emergency hotline. So our emergency hotline is 408-698-1820. They can contact us that way. Or if they're in a very dire situation and it really is a very bad situation and they do have access to the phone, they can always call the national hotline at 1-888-373-7888. And from that hotline, they will dispatch law enforcement to wherever they are, and they will come and they will do their best to get them out.
Sure. And how serious does law enforcement and government agencies actually take human trafficking?
Well, what we've seen on the FBI level and the vice level, they take it very seriously. They have been doing some great work, especially around New York City. There have been several takedowns recently in New York City, one involving two separate hotels, one in Brooklyn and one in Queens. And then there are other rings that have been taken down that have been orchestrated by more than one person. So they take it very seriously. They all work together. The girls are immediately given services, which is really very important. They're not arrested and thrown in jail. They are they're given over to service providers that will help them, that will get them to shelter and get them somewhere safe. So on that level, they take that very, very seriously. And it is very important to them, and we're very grateful that they're out there doing that, because there's so much going on, especially in a city like New York, like we spoke about in the past. You know, New York City is a big hub for this thing, so they're doing great work. However, there is still some more work to be done in the bottom half of law enforcement that is actually being orchestrated by the FBI and the vice level, and the task force, the human trafficking task forces that they have created along with organizations like myself, to be able to give training to the bottom half of law enforcement, which is really the uniformed policemen that are out in the streets, that are on the ground, that either walk the streets every day or drive in the police cars. There actually is a series of ongoing trainings to that part of law enforcement to give them more of a broader perspective of what it is to work with a human trafficking victim, to see human trafficking victims, and to really identify if someone truly is being trafficked, and to give them much more sensitivity to the issue than right. what they've had in the past. So.
Sure. And I mean, have you ever come into a situation, or do you know about a situation where it was kind of tough to, you know, tough to kind of convince people, or the police or the FBI or anybody? Is it there, that area, that gray area of, you know, is this mm-hmm. human trafficking, or is this just a relationship? I mean, you know, or, you know, how do you kind of go about that?
Well, in the very beginning, when people started seeing this, even though it's been around for years, but once it started to surface to what it is now, in the beginning, even at the FBI level, they didn't know how to spot it. And of course, you know, it was trial and error. There were mistakes that were made, but the fortunate thing is that they corrected them fairly quickly. But that has not been corrected at the uniform level. And even now, still, you know, there are some in law enforcement at that level that still don't want to believe that, you know, that there are sex trafficking victims. And, you know, I don't know if it's because because they have a badge, they figure they can do whatever they want. I mean, I don't really know what it is, but I mean, I would think in my mind, if the training that's coming to them is coming down from a higher level of law enforcement, it really should be taken very seriously.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Now, what I wanted to, I know that in the last episode, you know, which was quite some time ago, before obviously mm-hmm. you left for your trip. Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking about Amnesty International and mm-hmm. this policy now that seems like they're favoring the decriminalization of prostitution.
Right.
You know, I know I certainly am kind of surprised by this, and I mean, I'm sure, you know, there's many people out there that are horrified mm-hmm. at the idea that this would be something that they would, you know, consider.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, see, the thing with Amnesty International is that they haven't always been working on women's human rights issues since the inception of that organization. That organization was mostly focused on things like, you know, like wars and unjust punishment and
right.
those type of human rights issues. So women's human rights issues just recently came on to Amnesty, like in the last few years. So maybe they still don't know how to actually deal with it. But, I mean, doing something like this is not dealing with it in the right way. They have, like you just said, they have a lot of people very horrified. There are a lot of activists out there that are speaking out loudly against it. There are some
right.
survivors out there speaking out against it. I know some of them. Some international mm-hmm. survivors that are very, one in particular who is very, very vocal about it. This young lady was trafficked in Ireland, so she was trafficked in Europe. She was very, mm-hmm. very vocal about speaking out against their opposition, speaking out against what they were saying. And, it really is something really very bad. And it's also something that I think that a lot of countries, especially in Europe, are really grappling with, to legalize prostitution or to not legalize prostitution. As we see the countries that have legalized prostitution, it has just increased sex trafficking victims enormously. And now they can't go in and get them because, you know, everything is legalized. And it's just, it's doing something like that to criminalizing, it just makes everything a big mess. And I think that it hurts more women and more girls and more children in the process. I don't know what the thinking behind that was in Amnesty, but it's not something that was widely popular at all. It really wasn't.
I can't see how it would be. I reference the way that countries now are handling, drugs and how the legalization
right.
of certain drugs and all that, you know, and again, I don't knock what other people do, you know, as long as you don't hurt anybody, you know, be my guest, do what you want to do, just don't hurt anybody in the process. Unfortunately, obviously, you know, there are so many variables to it that people always do end up getting hurt. And as I was trying to get to, you know, you see that there's countries like Portugal, which have totally decriminalized all drug possession, drug use, and they're claiming that drug use has actually gone down on a whole, which is great. But I don't see it like that with prostitution. It's like you just said, those countries that are doing it, that are legalizing this, it's just opening the floodgates, and there's no way to control it.
Absolutely, because mostly it's a big money maker. You know, I mean, I've said in the past with drugs, the reason why it goes down is because once you sell a drug, that's it. The deal is done. You got your money. That's it. But a human being is a reusable commodity. So that's why sex trafficking, once you legalize prostitution, it just grows because then there's so much more money to be made. With drugs, once you sell it, that's it. It's gone. You're finished. So
it's absolutely crazy. It's insane. Yeah. That's a very, very shocking revelation to hear that they would do something like that. But maybe it's like you said, you know, they're kind of new to it. They don't really know. I don't know how people involved and running, you know, Amnesty International don't just have the common sense to say that, you know, kind of what you just said, but, you know.
I don't know the thinking behind that decision, but hopefully they'll rethink that. I don't know. I don't know who they're working with on this piece of legislation. I really don't know, but it's not good.
Well, so now I know that you you mentioned countries that have actually, you know, gone forward and tried, you know, the decriminalization of prostitution and such. Are there any countries out there though that you know of that are handling it in a positive way?
There are a lot of countries that are trying. You know, obviously Sweden is at the top of the tier because that's where the Nordic model came out, reducing demand. And then there are countries that are struggling a lot, like India is struggling a lot. Africa, especially Africa, is struggling a lot now with the rise of terrorism. When we see ISIS, we see Boko Haram. I mean, they are really driving up sex trafficking a lot. In countries like Syria, you have ISIS enslaving the Yazidi women, enslaving Christian women, Jewish women, selling them as sex slaves. Boko Haram is doing the same thing with the Christian girls in Nigeria. And so, you know, those countries, you know, for those countries it's harder because they're tackling two things. They're tackling terrorism and then sex trafficking. And both are really enormous issues. And so it's like, what do you go after first? You know, villages are being bombed. People are dying at a fast rate. But then at the same time, you have young girls being taken and trafficked, and who knows where they are, you know. So it's really hard. And then, of course, from that, you have the enormous refugee situation. You know, people traveling across borders, which creates even more trafficking. You know, people taking advantage of them. You know, we see even boats coming into the shores of, like, places like Catania in Italy where, you know, thousands of people are just cramped into one small area just trying to escape, paying thousands of dollars, paying their whole life savings just to get away, and they don't know what's going to happen to them, you know. So, as far as that goes, I mean, it's not that they're not trying. It's just such an enormous, enormous situation.
Of course. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so now, for everyone just joining us, we're halfway through episode 8 with Samantha Inesta of Be A Sister to A Sister. The website's beasistertoasister.org. And really, Samantha, before we move on, I just want to know, you know, if you can just share with people the best ways to reach out to Amnesty International and voice their concerns and disapproval of the policy.
I mean, you could email them. I know that they probably have a general email that you can email them. I'm sure that they've been flooded with many emails.
Yeah.
I'm sure they also have a general number. I would just go on and Google or look up Amnesty International and just contact them from there. Whether you'll get a response or not, I don't know.
Right.
If you call them, I'm not quite certain that you'll get someone that will pick up the phone, but you can try. You can try. I know that people have taken on to the social media platform and have you know, voiced their concerns and their opinions about it online. I know that when it first came out, the whole Twitter sphere just like blew up on it. And I'm sure that people are still contacting them, voicing their personal concerns about what they decided.
Sure. Absolutely. And so moving along now, I know that you had some traveling that you did in the last couple of weeks.
Yes.
So
yes.
I would love to hear about your trip to Egypt. Was it just Egypt?
Yes, I just went to Egypt. That was the only country.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, obviously, this was somewhat of business, right? I mean, you got to see some different things that were going on.
Right.
So feel free to share with us, you know, everything that you saw there.
So I went to Egypt I was there for about almost 2 weeks. I just recently came back last week. And so the thing with Egypt is that they have a lot of what they call street children. So a lot of children are out on the street just basically selling the little packages of tissues. That's like a really big thing, and selling anything they can just to try to eat. And it's comprised of boys and girls. So unfortunately what happens is when these children are out in the street, you know, it's very easy for them to get picked up by someone who wants to use them in any way that they possibly can, and that is a big thing. And so there are there's one particular organization that's doing really good work. They're called FACE. It's for children in need, and they are in Cairo, Egypt, and they are doing some really good work. They also have a shelter for boys, which is something that we do not have here in the United States. Where the children get fed, they get access to education, they have recreational activities, they get nutritional support, they get all kinds of mentoring programs, and they have all kinds of services, medical services, anything that they need. And they also have an outreach team that goes once a week out into the streets and talks to children, ask them if they need help, you know, and offer them food and things like that. So one of the good things is that in the coming year, they are going to open up a center for girls, which is going to be good because in the beginning they didn't have many girls coming to them, but it seems like there's going to be more. So they're going to open up a shelter and basically offer the same thing for girls, which I think is fantastic.
Absolutely. Now, how did you get linked up with that organization?
I have a friend that she's a lawyer, and she did some work with the IOM organization, which is the International Order of Migration, and within that organization they did deal with victims of sexual violence and trafficking and things of that nature, and they also had shelters there as well, and so she was connected with this organization because she had actually done work with them, and so she introduced me to them. Unfortunately, there are some IOM shelters that do not exist in Egypt anymore for whatever reason, but it's good that there are still some organizations like FACE that are there that do have shelters. The NGO situation in Egypt is not really that stable because NGOs have been put under a lot of pressure, especially with the new government of Sisi there, but there are some that are still moving forward, and I hope that they continue to move forward because they're really badly needed, especially for the children and the young girls in Egypt that are out in the street and that are poor and that are facing these challenges every day.
And so how, you know, obviously with the, what part of Egypt were you in? Were you specifically in one area?
Well, I was in Cairo. I was staying in Heliopolis, which is basically, it's called, I'm going to give you the English version. It's called New Egypt,
okay.
Where I was. And so I was close to another area called Nasser City. So I was around in that area. The one thing that I do want to say about Egypt,
sure,
as far as women are concerned, is that unfortunately there's a large presence of street harassment that is still plaguing the streets of Egypt because during the revolution there was a lot of police presence on the streets of Egypt. So, you know, women felt a lot safer, you know, to just go to the market, young girls going to school, or even just going to the cafe. Going to the cafe is
right.
A very big thing culturally in Egypt. And so it was good. But now that the revolution is over and all the squares are cleared out, so have the police cleared out. And so now, unfortunately, it's opened a door for street harassment to start to creep back in. So you see things of, like, men following women around in their cars and trying to get them to come into their cars. You know, some men will be bold enough to literally stop the car and get out and start following the woman, you know, and things
sure.
of that nature. So that's something that needs to be addressed there as well. Of course, you know, a lot of that has to do with the way women in Egypt are seen as part of society as a whole. So there were several campaigns in the past that were actually done to raise awareness to try to stop this, and it did work. I mean, there are some changes, but they're very slow. But I think that these campaigns need to resurface again, and I think that more awareness and education to this needs to come out again because I think that it's just starting to happen more and more out in the streets. And it doesn't, you know, a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, how are you dressed there or whatever, but it really doesn't make a difference because there are women that are covered from head to toe with hijab and everything, and they're still being harassed on the streets.
Right.
So it really just doesn't matter what you wear. It's that's just the nature of it, unfortunately.
Now, what's the problem with the police presence? How come they don't have such the presence there?
Well, because, you know, during the revolution, you know, things were very volatile. There was a lot of violence, a lot of killing. So they do need a police presence. But now, you know, it's kind of like here, too. Like, you know, you say to yourself, well, where are the cops, right? Well, it's kind
right.
of the same thing in Egypt.
Sure,
where are the
no,
cops?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, they don't think that it's that important for them to be out in the streets to make sure that women are safe, you know, which is why, again, we need to educate and say that, listen, you know, this is a women's human rights issue because, you know, why should you have to live in fear to go out into the street, to go to school or go to the market or the cafe or to go meet a friend? You know, I noticed that a lot of girls there travel in groups, that it's very rare that girls walk alone. And the unfortunate reality is that some of this harassment happens during daytime hours. It's not even...
Mm-hmm.
You know, like late at night, like 11 o'clock at night. No, this is like during the middle of the day.
Wow.
So.
Now, I know, obviously, we spoke about this, too, that
mm-hmm.
that trafficking and harassment is definitely a global problem,
mm-hmm.
not just limited to New
of
York
course.
Or big cities or, you know, Egypt, like you said. But
right.
on a whole, from what you're used to seeing, and you've traveled to places that have these just crazy
mm-hmm.
issues.
Mm-hmm.
Where is it easier for people to get help? I mean, in a place like this, I can't imagine in Egypt it's very easy for people to get the help.
Right. Well, what they usually say is that if this is happening to you, just if you can find a police officer, obviously you would go to him first and you would tell him what's going on, or they would tell you to go into any local shop and tell them, you know, what's going on, this man is harassing me, this man is doing this to me, and supposedly they will call the police. that is what I am told what would happen. That's the best thing to do. You know, just basically kind of like make it seem. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because, you know, obviously, you know, the people in the neighborhood, they really don't want to see it. They really don't want that to happen. So if you make a scene and you tell someone, you run into a store, they will call the police and it will stop.
Sure.
That's what I'm told, you know. I mean, it's kind of basically the same thing that you would do here. If someone is harassing you in the street, you would try to find someone that would help you.
No, definitely. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
yeah.
And you're right about that. But now, would you, with your expectations of what you had going there, were you shocked at all by anything, or were you pretty much prepared mentally for it?
No, I was prepared for it. I've been to Egypt once before, and that's, yeah, I've been prepared for it. It's an unfortunate reality. It's something that a lot of the women and girls have to live with. I mean, they shouldn't have to live with it, but it's something that they go through on a daily basis. And to be quite honest, it's not that much different than the United States, than New York. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, there are men here that basically do the same thing. So it's not really that surprising to me. What was surprising to me, though, was the following of the car in the street and getting out. And, you know, actually following the girl, actually following the person, that's what kind of shocked me a little bit. But as far as everything else, no, not really.
I mean, that has to be a real shock to see that happening.
Yeah. It just, and the thing of it is that it's just relentless. Like, I mean, no should be no, and that should be it. No does not mean maybe. No does not mean keep going. No does not mean I want to talk to you. No means no.
Right.
Stop. So that's pretty much what was happening.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you were able to open an organization or, you know, lead a new organization over there, would you tackle that? Would you try to say, you know what, I will, you know, try to open something up over there?
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, and what I'm trying to do is kind of work with some of the organizations that are already there and give them that extra support. And I'm sure that would be a campaign that we could start that, you know, that there really is a need for it. I'm sure that would be something that could be started. And it's a campaign that you can just get the local women, the local young girls in the community to just come out and just do it. I mean, I think that there are a lot of girls that want to see it stop, obviously, and they have no issue with starting a campaign and doing it. You know, all they need is the right support, and they will be out there fighting against it.
Right. But do you think that there is enough support to get it done, to make it happen?
Well, see, that's the problem. I mean, there needs to be more organizations within the country that are willing to tackle that issue, and not something like outside, like, you know, like the UN. It should be something that's within the country. But I think that, you know, they're more focused on the violence, they're more focused on the sexual exploitation than they are on the harassment. You know, I guess that they're more focused on the poverty of the children and of the young people is more of a situation that they feel that they need to really look at more. And I guess they feel that, you know, it's a governmental issue, that there should be more police out there. There should be more protection for the women
Sure.
and for the girls. And that's really
Absolutely.
What needs to happen. Yeah.
Well, Samantha, unfortunately, we are running out of time for today's episode. I do want to thank you again for coming on today
sure.
and really, you know, sharing with us. And I definitely have a ton more questions about your time over in Egypt. And
sure.
I know that there are some other things that we want to tackle for today, but we'll save them for next episode in 2 weeks.
Okay. Great.
So if you'd like, one more time, just let people know the best ways to contact you.
Sure. You can email me, at info@beasister2asister.org. That's the best way to contact me.
All right. Well, Samantha, again, like I said, we're going to have you back in 2 weeks' time, same time, same place. And again, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
All right. Well, from everyone here at CMC Radio, this is Rob May saying we'll see you soon. Take care, everybody, and have a great day.